The meeting, Capital Investment Committee hearing for April 24th is called to order. Not seeing a quorum, let's just start with our testifiers. So members, today we'll be hearing several more individual bonding bills. Each has been allotted 5 to 6 minutes. All bills will be heard on an informational basis only with amendments offered for reference. So we'll get started. Welcome to the committee leader, Damon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Ryer. I appreciate the time to hear House File 4695 to the committee. Thank you for letting us present this. House File 4695 is for the City of Cold Spring, a wastewater treatment facility, asking for $29 million appropriated from bond proceeds to the Public Facilities Authority. And this is for design, construct, and equipment improvements for the city's wastewater treatment facility. Today, Madam Chair, I have two representatives here from the City of Cold Spring, and with that, I would turn it over to them for testimony.
Thank you, Leader Damon. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Stevie, the Public Works Director for the City of Cold Spring, along with Chris Dockendorf, City Administrator. First, we'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity to share information with you on our wastewater treatment facility improvement project. The City of Cold Spring needs to update and replace aging infrastructure at our wastewater treatment facility. The facility is a Class A major facility, and we treat upwards of 1.35 million gallons per day. Much of it is 40 to 60 years old, and this project will improve the reliability and performance of the facility. We plan to remove the trickling filter process and expand the activated sludge treatment process, including expanding the organic loading treatment capacity. The project also includes updating the biosolids treatment process by adding sludge dewatering, which will improve the ability to dispose of the biosolids. We provide wastewater treatment to both the cities of Cold Spring and Rockville, so this project will help the residents, business, and major industry in both cities. In our handout, we referenced raising sewer rates to a level that is 260% of the current rates, which are already higher than average compared to surrounding communities. The basis for this is that our current revenue from rates is $1.9 million per year, and we would need an additional $3 million for the annual loan payments, so our revenue from rates would have to increase to $4.9 million, which is 2.6 times the current revenue. This rate increase would be unaffordable and unsustainable for the residents, businesses, and industries. If we're able to get the $29.8 million, our rate increase will be around 70%, which is still on the higher end, but at least it's more affordable for our residents, business, and industry. The city has pursued the following types of financing. We are on the project priority list for a loan through the Public Facilities Authority Clean Water Revolving Fund. We are applying for Green Project Reserve funding through MPCA. We will apply for a point source implementation grant. We are applying this week for congressionally directed spending from Senators Klobuchar and Smith and Congresswoman Fischbach. Other types of funding that we have explored but do not qualify for include a Water Infrastructure Fund grant, Small Cities Development Grant through DEED, USDA Rural Development funding. The city has done consistent rate increases over the years to operate our wastewater treatment facility effectively and to build a reserve, and we plan to continue this, but it is difficult to save enough for a $52 million project. Our treatment process already includes nitrogen removal, and with more stringent requirements coming from MPCA, our facility plan will meet those standards. The city has done an excellent job operating the wastewater treatment facility and has been recognized annually by MPCA for outstanding operations. Thank you for, again, having us here today. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Director Stevie. Lead Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my question is for any of you, kind of an obvious question in a situation like this, can this be scaled?
Director Stevie.
As of right now, in 2004 we did a plant expansion where we added the B&R treatment to the trickling filter activated sludge process, and my predecessor wanted to salvage as many of the buildings and equipment as he could back then to get us by. Now 20 years later, that is just beyond salvageable. And a big portion of this plant rehabilitation is getting rid of the trickling filter process that it's a ferric, we call it a ferric hog, a chemical hog, and it just doesn't function as well as it's supposed to. with the biosolid side of it, we talked about doing different things to lessen the cost. One of the biggest costs is the biosolids. And what we're finding now is we do a land application with farmers in the local area, and it's becoming more and more difficult to get on land to do that. So coming up with an alternate route for biosolids to get us through, and dewatering the biosolids more to haul them away in dumpsters. So.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the explanation. But was that a yes or a no? Can it be scaled?
Dr. Stevie.
Quite frankly, no. It can't be scaled too much at all. Where it's at right now, Stantec, our engineering firm, has done as much as they could to try to save anything that's there. And we will be utilizing a lot of what's there, so I would say no.
Thank you.
Thank you. Closing, Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, can you just speak on the funding piece again? So if we're looking at just the information that you provided, will this just be the rates to the city of Cold Spring too, or will this be the rates for the city of Rockville too, understanding that this treatment facility will benefit both?
Director Stevie.
Great question. The city of Rockville is currently 25% of our capacity. So if we were to get the bonding bill, they would pay 25% of the remaining balance, and the city of Cold Spring 75%. So we haven't been in discussions with them on their rates. That's kind of their thing. We just have a contract with them with our wastewater facility. So what you see in front of you is strictly for our rates in the city of Cold Spring.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one last follow-up. So when you mentioned the federal community projects and whatnot, so which office have you asked to see if they're willing to submit this? Have you touched base with any of our senators or, you know, congressperson regarding this?
Director Stevie.
I can answer that. I've been in contact with Senators Klobuchar and Smith's offices and also Congresswoman Fischbach, and they emailed me the application process just, I think, Friday for the congressionally directed spending, and I have the application done, and we're ready to send off to all three of them.
Introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. Chris Dockendorf, City Administrator.
Thank you. Closing comments, Leader Damon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just appreciate the committee's willingness to listen to this project. As you can hear, that there's been very conservative work going in over the years, making do with what was available to be done over the last number of years. This has come to the point that the funding is very much needed, and all sources of potential funding, not just coming to the state, all sources of potential funding and going forward have been explored and looked at. So I, again, appreciate your willingness to hear this bill.
Thank you, Leader Damon, and testifiers. Next up, we have another Leader Damon bill, House File 5342. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you for hearing House File 5342. This is to do with the City of St. Joseph. And I do have a testifier with me today, but I just wanted to mention that House File 5342 is for St. Joseph, the sewer main improvements, asking for $5.7 million for the pre-design, design, construct, and equipment improvements necessary to expand the city's wastewater collection system and related infrastructure. And with that, I have a testifier, and I think you will gain more from what you hear from my testifier.
Or not.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor Schultz. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Rick Schultz, Mayor of St. Joseph for the past 14 years. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Ryer and committee members. I also serve just as a note, a president of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I want to thank Representative Daymuth for presenting this, our bonding request. You should have in front of you some of the details behind the sewer main extension bonding request. This project is part of St. Joseph's long-term capital investment plan. Investment in a main sewer expansion aids the city with economic development of a commercial and residential corridor. There will be an expansion of our housing stock as well along this corridor. Bonding for this project helps us while restraining our property taxes. 28% of our tax base is tax exempt, primarily educational and ecclesiastical. Last year, the bonding request was not part of the final funding bills. And by waiting another year to submit, we expect construction costs will increase by another 10% or so. The city is prepared to match the bonding amount of 5.7. Our finance director and bond council have already been involved in the financing solutions. Just to jump ahead, we can't phase this in any way, shape, or form. It's a long, big pipe. And we have already submitted our CDS, capital directed spending, to Emmer, Klobuchar, and Smith. I'm prepared to answer any other questions you may have.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Mayor. If I missed it, I'm sorry, but did you mention any PFA eligibility?
We're not available. This is all new construction, so we're not available.
You're not available?
Yeah.
Okay. And while I have the floor here, others of you who are making PFA eligible requests, if you do know, include that in your testimony, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Lee Damon. Thank you, Mayor Schultz. And now we will proceed to House File 4714.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. There.
Welcome to the committee, Deputy Leader Torkelson. Good to see you.
And
please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Paul Torkelson, State Rep 15B. Happy to be here. And thank you for hearing House File 4714. Appreciate it being before the committee. It has to do with the City of Revere, and I have an expert testifier who will give you the details.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Christy Butler. I am the city clerk for the City of Revere, located in Redwood County in southwest Minnesota. I am pleased to have with me today Mayor Dean Baker and Laura Osley, representing the city's engineering firm. The city is seeking $3.6 million in assistance from the state to fund an innovative $5.5 million plan to rebuild our city streets and failing storm sewer system in a manner that will be cost effective and environmentally sound for the next 40 years. Revere is a city of 88 people, where 63% of the households are low to moderate income. An average water sewer bill in our community exceeds $100 a month. Of that population, we have a board and care home that houses 20 plus people, with more than 90% receiving county assistance. We have an extremely low average net tax capacity and no financial sustainable way of meeting this committee's desired funding match of 50% or more. Revere ranks in the bottom 4% of all city and township taxing jurisdictions in Minnesota, with little business property tax increases fall on homeowners. Originally, our city council considered a $9.3 million plan to rebuild city streets and storm sewers as is, with increased loans and a larger funding request from the state. The City Council determined that this initial plan was environmentally and economically unsustainable. Working with a new engineering firm in 2022, our City Council developed an innovative plan where all city streets would be reconstructed and reduced in size by 25% with a reduced size storm sewer system. This plan will reduce maintenance and stormwater runoff. Over the years, over the road's 40-year lifespan, maintenance will be reduced by 86% from an average of $175,000 a year to only $24,000 a year. Because this plan does not include water and sewer infrastructure, which was replaced in 2020 and 2005, we are not eligible for low interest rate and 40-year repayment options offered through the USDA. We are only eligible for a small amount of grant funds from HUD and a 20-year USDA loan program and city property taxes. Last week, I understand that this committee discussed the challenges of small cities that have very low average net tax capacity. We are one of those cities and would like your consideration. We also respect concerns raised in this committee about significant state expenditures for very small cities. This is why I want to emphasize to this committee that our city council and engineering firm has seriously worked hard to bring you this innovative plan. We have reduced project costs by 40%, reduced new city debt by 68%, and reduced our request for state funding by 23%. We respectfully ask for your consideration of our request for $3.6 million in state funding for a project that is environmentally and financially sound It will benefit the citizens of Revere for the next 40 years and beyond, and perhaps will become a template for addressing infrastructure needs for other small cities facing the same difficulties that we are. Madam Chair and members, thank you for your time and support for the City of Revere.
Thank you, Deputy Leader Duff. Torkelson, sorry, I was expecting my colleague over here to have a question. Appreciate you being here for the committee. Thanks to the testifier.
Well, thanks for hearing the bill, and I just have to relate a quick story. The last time Christy was here was for her class trip when they flew to the Capitol and then took the bus home. I've never heard of anybody doing that before. So
sixth grade class trip.
Sixth grade. They flew from Worthington and took the bus back. I don't know what happened to the plane, but anyway.
That is amazing. So now are you flying home?
No, I wish. Because it's kind of a long drive. But.
Thanks for
hearing. Well, thank you for being
thanks
here.
Thanks for hearing file 4714.
All right, next up we have Representative Bransbill, House File 5397. Welcome to the committee, Representative Brands. Once you're settled, go ahead and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am interested in today talking about a bill that I have for the City of Lafayette, and I would move the bill in its form for consideration in the bonding bill that's upcoming. So Lafayette is in need of about $1.3 million to continue to upgrade their wastewater treatment plant in the state. In the state it's at right now, there's some challenges because the water itself, there's some issues with taste, but also the bigger issue is that they've been out of compliance for a few years now when it comes to the chloride levels in their wastewater. And so the grant would ensure that they have a reverse osmosis system in place, but also that they would have the associated improvements necessary to take care of those chloride and cleanup issues as well. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Brand. I see you. Do you not have a testifier?
I'm guessing not. Yeah, I know that they had to make the travel today from Lafayette, Minnesota. I was told that Alan Fox is going to be here today, but I have not seen Alan today, and he didn't. I just checked my email about 2 minutes ago, and as of 2 minutes ago, he didn't say he was here or he left. So I don't have much else, I guess.
Well, thank you.
In with the content for today is the City of Lafayette letter that talks a little bit about some of the challenges as well. And I just want to point out that the MPCA standard, which is 230 milligrams per liter, and they've got chronic levels that are acute at about 860 milligrams per liter. And so these chloride levels are way higher than they're supposed to be. They've been out of compliance. They did receive a grant from the federal government. That is worth pointing out. I appreciate the fact that they get $1 million by the EPA CDS grant. And so they have $1 million that they can use. And then the extra cost of $1.305 million is the added cost. We're talking about a small city, a few hundred citizens. They don't have the tax capacity to do what they need to do. And we want them to continue to function as a city. We want to get them back into compliance. And I think this is the best way for all of us to do that.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Seeing none, any closing comments?
Thank you very much for the consideration of this piece of legislation. I really think that water is an important part of who we are as Minnesotans, but also what the cities do when they create the services for the citizens. I think that clean drinking water is of utmost importance, and the same with our wastewater, because that goes back into our state as well, and folks downriver will have to pay the consequences if we don't get these things taken care of. So thank you very much for the consideration today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Keeler. Your bill draft coded CG389. Welcome to the committee, Rep. Keeler. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair. It's good to see you up there and members. Heather Keeler, District 4A, here to discuss House File XXX. We did drop it, so it should have a House File today. What this bill does is we have taken into consideration the shift in the budget allowance and some of the things that we're trying to do in our community. So I know we were here, I think 2 weeks ago, talking about the psychiatric residential treatment facility. And I do just want to pause. I talk often about being a Greater Minnesota member and what that means for me to travel, but I do want to give a shout out to my county commissioners who have and our staff who have continuously made the trip to come down here to be in person. Knowing from Greater Minnesota, that's always a challenge. So thank you all for that. What we're doing is we're looking to invest in a Clay County Youth Transitional Housing Facility. One of the things that's really nice about this is for our juvenile detention center is it creates an opportunity for us to really do transitional housing, which means we're providing girls ages 16 to 19 with skill sets. We actually work with them. We help them budget. We help them understand their financial planning. We help them understand how to get a lease, how to live in an apartment. So we're really helping to transition them to be wonderful adults in our world and be active members of our community. And it's wonderful what we can do in Clay County. And with that, Chair, I'll hand it over to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chair Lee and esteemed members of the House Capital Investment Committee. Thank you for this opportunity to join you today. My name is Jenny Mojo. I'm a county commissioner in Clay County, and I'm here with my team today to advocate for critical funding to address the crisis of lack of placement options for juvenile programming across Minnesota. The shortage of placement options for youth involved in the social service and criminal justice systems in our state is dire. Despite our tireless efforts, the scarcity of care and treatment options for our youth has led to significant harms in our communities, disruptions in our schools, and tragically, in some cases, serious injury and even loss of life. Clay County has a long-standing dedication to delivering progressive, evidence-based juvenile services. The West Central Regional Center serves both a co-ed 55-bed secure facility and a co-ed 25-bed non-secure care program. Located in Moorhead, Minnesota, the center spans 50,000 square feet and is owned by Clay County. It offers services tailored to juveniles facing behavioral, protection, dependency, and delinquency challenges.
Does it make it any better?
Anything for you.
More money. Thank you so much. I'll continue. Operating under a cooperative service agreement with 11 counties, our programs are trusted and utilized by jurisdictions ranging from our northwest region to the metro area and extending as far southeast as Winona County. We have witnessed an alarming trend in the increasing number of female youth entering our juvenile facilities. For instance, from 2021 to 2023, Clay County's Juvenile Center experienced a 62% increase in female youth in the non-secure facility and a staggering 117% increase in the secure unit for females. This has led to a surge in demand for transitional programming for youth that underscores our urgent need for action. While we believe that funding for prevention programs are ideal, we cannot forget that youth that have already fell ill to the social ills of our society. So in response, Clay County has pledged $200,000 towards the renovation of a 5,000 square foot space on the Clay County campus. Adjacent to our current juvenile facilities, this proposed space is ideally situated to facilitate the expansion of critical resources and the development of a comprehensive continuum of care to meet the evolving needs of our region and our state at large. Clay County is respectfully requesting $1,093,000 in funds to equip a youth transitional housing facility. The funding we are requesting would enable Clay County to make the necessary capital improvements to create bed capacity for 8 to 12 females ranging between the age of 16 to 19. With our resources, commitment, and expertise to progressive juvenile programming, we are confident in our ability to sustain this crucial transition program for the long term. The West Central Regional Juvenile Center is a learning environment in which the values of each individual are recognized, developed, and matured for the betterment of our community. Our facilities have a longstanding partnership with our Moorhead Area School District to provide educational programming that is in full compliance with Minnesota Department of Education's requirements. Additionally, we have multiple well-established relationships with numerous local medical and mental health agencies who provide essential therapies and services to youth on a daily basis within our facility. Furthermore, by investing in this program, we have an opportunity to not only provide high-quality evidence-based programming in our region and state, but also to develop a model that can be replicated by communities across of Minnesota. In conclusion, we ask for your support and request for this funding to remodel the space in the juvenile remodel this space for a juvenile transition program. By doing so, we invest in the future of our youth and ensure a safer, more supportive environment for generations to come through accountability, education, and community involvement. A valued future awaits. Thank you so much for your attention, your time, and consideration, and we stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I think I caught this, but you were saying this is for 10 to 12 female.
Correct.
Commissioner.
Chair, Representative Erdahl, thank you for the question. Yes, we're anticipating that this would provide 8 to 12 beds for ages 16 to 19 target.
Leader Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, are there other facilities of this type in the Moorhead area?
Commissioner Mosha.
Thank you. I might technically yield to our director of our facility. No.
We have the director of our facility here.
Sorry.
If you want to bring him up to answer any questions.
Okay. Please have a seat, introduce yourself for the record, and proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is James O'Donnell. I'm the superintendent of the West Central Regional Juvenile Center. And no, there isn't. There isn't even in our region. There's a significant lack of female programming overall, and just in the state of Minnesota, there's lack of juvenile programming at all. So,
Leader.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and well, I guess I wish that I could advocate for doing more of this type of thing, but you know. With the monies available, that you know might be a little premature, but you know certainly concerned about you know juvenile care across the state, and maybe something to look at more in the future. Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Keeler, thanks so much for bringing this bill forward, and to all of you as a Greater Minnesota member, you know how hard it is to make the trek down, and also know that this serving youth and especially ending homelessness is near and dear to your hearts and to mine. I'm curious, you know, we were able to build a youth transitional housing in Duluth that was able to accommodate parenting or pregnant folks, and it's so important that as our homelessness system, just we need to continue to be more responsive to our young people. And so really, again, just thank you for that, and just curious, like, if that's a population that would be served and that that's a need that you're seeing for our young folks in that range of 16 to 19 who may be pregnant or parenting. Thank you so much.
Please go ahead.
Chair, Representative. Yeah, it's there's always that issue going on. I would say it's not as common as more so, but I would say it's a possibility, and it's something we would work with when it comes through. So, I mean, we work with everything independently. Every case is different. Everybody has different needs, and we're not afraid of taking on anything. So,
I just want to.
Rep. Keeler, any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair. Were there more questions? I just wanted to respond to Kozlowski. No? My closing? Okay. Thanks, Chair and members. I also wanted to say what we do really well here is connect with our community on an individual basis. We really understand the needs of the individuals that are here and then connect them in the resources that they have. That's one of the beautiful parts of being a transitional housing space, is that it's not always just who we have housed on the inside, but it's also being able to do that liaison work and really connect to the services outside. One of the other areas that I think is really important too is around sex trafficking and murdered and missing Indigenous relatives, making sure that we're educated and our staff understand what those signs are as well. So thank you all for the consideration. This is something that we're so deeply rooted in, and understanding that as we invest in this effort, it really impacts our future generations and what we can create in Minnesota. And again, ending homelessness is always an effort in my sphere of work. So thank you all, and happy to stay afterwards to answer any further questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler, and thanks for making the drive down.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Representative Burkle with an amendment H5304-A2. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. You referenced the A2 amendment. That just gets this...
For informational purposes.
For informational purposes. Just gets the number to reflect the inflationary cost since this whole project started. But thank you, Madam Chair, for this informational hearing on House File 5304. This bill would appropriate $734,000 for underground water storage tanks in the city of Kennedy. In January of 2017, the water tower in Kennedy froze, making it non-functional and unrepairable. The city was able to bypass the water tower to continue providing water to residents, but lost the ability to keep a water reserve for approximately 100-plus homes in town. And due to the excessive cost of replacing the water tower, they have moved forward with the plans to repair underground storage tanks and add a booster station that will help with their, that will become their water reserve. And with that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn this over to Melissa Winarovich from the City of Kennedy, and she'll give you more detail.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Melissa Winarovich. I'm the City Clerk for the City of Kennedy in Kitson County. I'd like to thank Representative Burkle for introducing House File 5304, and I'd like to thank you all for giving me the opportunity to testify today. Kennedy is a rural town in the very far northwest corner of Minnesota. As you know, in January of 2017, our water tower froze, and it is unrepairable. We bypassed the water tower, and this system was only meant for maintenance to the tower, but after 7 years, this is still the way we are operating. So due to the excessive cost of replacing the tower, we have moved forward with plans to construct a booster station and repair our underground storage tanks. Those tanks will become our water reserve. The total estimated cost of this project is $2,466,200, and a funding summary can be found in the informational document that was provided. We are fortunate that we have secured some federal funding, but we still need more help. Kennedy is made up of 103 homes, and the residents are known for being hardworking and dedicated to their family and community. Many of them are retired and on a fixed income. We have aging sewer infrastructure that we anticipate will require extensive repairs soon as well. We already operate on a very limited budget, and we fear an additional tax levy will be too much of a burden for our residents. The water line that supplies Kennedy is 18 miles long. If there is a break anywhere along that line, we lose water. Access to safe, affordable, and reliable water is a basic human right, and it is also very essential for fire protection. Without those water reserves, our fire hydrants in town are unusable. If our fire department were to try to draw water from those hydrants, they would risk collapsing the water line to Kennedy. Without those functioning hydrants, we are limited to 5,000 gallons of water that we have stored in our fire trucks and the water brought by mutual aid. 5,000 gallons of water gives you about 6 to 10 minutes of fire suppression. So once on scene, the main goal of our fire department would be to utilize that water that they have on hand to suppress the fire just enough to begin search and rescue. It will be about 20 minutes before the nearest mutual aid arrives on scene. The unfortunate reality is that the structure will likely be a complete loss before mutual aid arrives. So I'd like to paint a picture for you. A home catches fire and 911 is called. Our volunteer fire department arrives on scene. They begin using their limited water supply to suppress the fire to begin search and rescue. This may mean that they enter the home with only a fraction of the water that they began with. The best case scenario is that they make entry and rescue the family inside. Now I'd like you to think about the worst case scenarios. One is that they don't have enough water to even begin helping the family inside and are faced with the difficult decision to use their limited water to begin protecting the surrounding homes. The other is that they enter the home but run out of water before everyone is able to exit, including themselves. So the need for water reserves in Kennedy goes beyond flushing toilets or taking showers. It is a public safety issue. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to speak today.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, so Melissa. So how cold does it have to get for a water tower to freeze?
I think that particular night it was around 30, 40 below zero. And it was a stretch for a while that we had those temperatures.
Okay. Leader Duff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so what if you have a new water tower? And this is just a kind of maybe a general question. I mean, generally, how are water towers kept from freezing?
They have a circulation pump that pumps up and kind of keeps water moving.
Leader Duff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So had the circulation pump failed in your situation then?
I'm not exactly sure exactly what happened that night. I think it was a combination of the cold, and there may have been some issues with the pump. Okay.
Leader Duff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not trying to pick on you. This is actually, I'm just interested in, mm-hmm. you know, how water towers work in cold weather. So hopefully we can help you out in your situation.
I have a question. If you were to be funded, what's your construction timeline? When would you have the new storage tanks available and have this problem solved?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just talked with our engineer the other day, and we are looking to go to bids this summer and hoping to begin construction in the fall, completing sometime next year.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, closing comments, Representative Burkle.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members. As you've heard from Melissa, and I want to thank her, realize that when we talk about Greater Minnesota, we're talking about a six-hour drive for these folks to get down here. But this water project is extremely important to this small community, and I really appreciate the opportunity to place the needs of the city of Kennedy before the committee and thank the members.
Thank you both. And now we have Lead Erdahl presenting on behalf of Representative Bennett, House File 3867. Welcome to the table. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bennett is obviously not here today, and so I'm presenting for her. And this is for the City of Manchester for a project that they have, and I have regarding infrastructure, $2 million. And I have some testifiers here that Representative Bennett has brought in to speak.
All right. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee. I'm Steve Hanegraaffs, the mayor of the city. And I'm Steve Hanegraaffs, the mayor of the city of Manchester. I've lived there for 45 years. I've been mayor for 6 years, was active council member for 27 years. Our revenue for the city is $45,000 a year, and that's what it takes to run the city. The project is $2.2 million, and we have a household income of $43,000. Population is 45, and at times it's close to 50. We do have some rental properties. We have 7 businesses in town that are active, and we have Translate water main, and this Translate water main is approximately 60 years old, and it's made with asbestos, and the pump house, we have a holding tank that's a 2,000 gallon tank with capacity of 1,700 gallons. The water main was manufactured in 48 is when we put in the water main. And this asbestos water main our knowledge was created during World War II beyond the lack of cast iron that was available for the war at the time. We are getting more younger population with kids, and where it's real critical with the asbestos on it, just for the safety of it to start flaking off. We did have it tested, and it came back negative right now. But I was going to bring a piece along to show, but just for the safety of the people, we didn't do it. Like I said, the project is appropriation $2 million, projected at $2 million. The city's funding would be portion that the city could afford is right at 10% of the project. I think that's all I got.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Shirley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mayor, or the engineer. So what will happen if the asbestos fall into the water?
Please proceed.
To flake off and create this asbestos health problem in the drinking water itself. To digest asbestos, it causes a cancer.
Shirley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question is, is there a requirement for you to shut down that water, or are you still able to operate knowing that there are still health concerns or whatnot?
Mr. Mayor.
If the level gets too high, the health department will shut us down.
Seeing no other questions, any closing comments, Leader Dahl?
No, just thank you, Madam Chair, for the ability to testify today. Yeah, this is a serious health concern for a small town, and appreciate the consideration of the committee.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And next up, we have Representative Grossel, House File 5286. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Like I always say when we're presenting a bill, brevity is our friend. Try to get us back on track and get things moving again. This is a bill for Northern Township. File number, House File 5286, is for Northern Township and is for a sewer project, so it fits right in with what bonding is for. So with that being said, I will just a little caveat on this. This project will also help the regional DNR office in Bemidji, and also Lake Bemidji State Park. So with that being said, I will shut up and let my testifiers tell you the rest.
I have Supervisor Lane. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the rest of the members of the committee here for this opportunity to tell you about our project here today. My name is Chris Lane, and I have Jess Frenzel with me here as well. We are both supervisors for Northern Township. And today I'm here to discuss our request for $10 million in state funding to support our comprehensive wastewater project on Lake Bemidji. This initiative has been in development for over 3 years and builds on the efforts that trace back to the 1960s. Our community has long envisioned a wastewater system that encompasses the entire lake. As we are the first community on the Mississippi, we realize we play a crucial role in maintaining the water quality of the entire Mississippi River. We are now on the brink of making this vision a reality. To date, we have secured $6 million in federal funding and have committed an additional $4 million from our own local township funds, which represent about 50% of the total project costs. We now seek the state's support to complete our funding requirements and ensure this project's success. Our proposed solution involves the installation of a package plant system that covers the entire northern township shoreline of Lake Bemidji. This approach is not only economically viable, but is also timely as it aligns with other critical infrastructure needs in the area. For instance, several major facilities along the lake, including the state park, as we just mentioned, the DNR headquarters as well, and the Rutgers Birchmont Lodge Resort, all have end-of-life systems that require replacing immediately within the next few years. And furthermore, over about 50% of the residential systems that are along the lake there in that area are all over 20 years old and will be needed to replace soon too. Additionally, Beltrami County is set to renovate County Road 20, and this is the road that runs the length of our project on the north side of Lake Bemidji within the next 2 years. So coordinating our project with that road work will save millions in taxpayer dollars and avoid redundant construction efforts. This project is crucial for environmental preservation and public health, safeguarding Lake Bemidji, an iconic element of Minnesota's natural heritage and a popular destination, attracting hundreds of thousands of visitors annually, from trending towards impaired status. The completion of this project represents a significant environmental achievement for the Bemidji region and the state of Minnesota, promising long-term benefits for our lake and its surrounding communities up and down the Mississippi River. We have provided a high-level overview of our project and the handouts that hopefully you have before you today, and we're ready to share any more detailed information that you'd like to talk about right now. And thank you again for your time and consideration.
Thanks for your testimony. Questions? Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grossel, have you been out to the facility site to see the need out there? Just wondering how tied in you are with this project.
Representative Grossel.
I haven't been out to the specific site, but I've been out in that area numerous times campaigning and as working as a deputy sheriff years ago. And it's stuff that needs to be updated. And like I said, this will also benefit the regional DNR office as well as the state park up there, which there are numerous things that need to be done to make sure that those facilities stay updated, the sewage especially. Along that lake, like was stated by the testifier, that lake needs to be protected, and some of these sewage systems need to be replaced.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Grossel. Does sound like an important project, and certainly we do want to protect Lake Bemidji. It's a great tourist destination as well. So thank you, Madam Chair, for indulging me. Thank you, Representative Grossel.
Other questions? Seeing none, closing comments, Representative Grossel.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, and none for me. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. All right, next we have Representative Anderson's bill, House File 5371. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This House file is authored by myself and Representative Franzen. Thank you for that, Representative. And it's kind of a unique request in that we're not asking you for any new bonding dollars. We're asking for a repurposing of some money that was given by this committee back 5 or 6 years ago, 2017, to the Eagles Healing Nest and Sock Center. And for whatever reason, the money was never utilized. It was never used. And before it gets repurposed back to the state, we're trying one last time to put it to good use. And I have with me the new administrator at the NEST, and he will explain to you what the reason for the request is.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Sean Corr. I'm the current executive director at the Eagles Healing Nest at Sock Center. I want to take a minute and thank everybody for their time to listen to me speak on behalf of the Eagles Healing Nest and talk a little bit about our needs up there. Madam Chair, I've been at the executive directors for the Eagles Healing Nest since December 1st of 2023, so I've been out there for about 5 months. And as a veteran myself, recently retired, I've been in positions throughout my period of service to offer resources to soldiers and veterans in need. And I've watched and been able to identify some of the critical cracks in the system. And since I've been at the Eagles Healing Nest, I've identified a program that really is an example of what veterans need to heal and move forward. Some of the things that differs the Eagles Nest from other organizations that are out there is that we don't put a timeline on what it takes for a soldier to heal out there. And we give soldiers the resources that they need, whether it's outpatient resources, whether it's therapeutic resources. More importantly, we give them the time and the programs they need to heal at their pace. So when they leave the nest, they have that much cancer, they have that much more of a chance of success to get back on their feet. Our campuses is located in Sauk Center in Redwood Falls, and Sauk Center campus is roughly 125 acres, consisting of many, many Victorian-style buildings that were built anywhere from 1905, 1910, and beyond. Those buildings take a lot of money to refurbish and maintain. We've been, the Eagle's Nest, since it came to be about 10 years ago, has been working building to building to grow out there to be able to serve more veterans. We're at a position right now where four of our biggest needs I've laid out in front of the, or Representative Anderson's laid out in this bill. We have a couple roofs that are in dire need to be fixed out there so there's no further damage incurred to those buildings. One of our most important projects that we are on the cusp of finishing and doesn't need much more effort is a Lady Liberty housing, which is going to be specifically designed to house 16 female veterans, which that needs growing in the state. So anything that we can do to help those young ladies out is going to be beneficial. We have a food service building on our campus that is structurally sound and needs a lot of work, which would allow us to be able to provide better meals for the veterans and the folks out there that we serve. And then lastly, our Redwood Falls facility is in dire need of air conditioning replacement and updating, so those folks down there have good clean air conditioning that meets code. Those are really some of the needs that we have at the nest. I also understand that the Eagle's Healing Nest has been painted negatively in the press lately for some of the past transgressions out there. I'm here to assure everybody that there is a new board of directors in place. I am the new executive director. I build myself off a platform of transparency for all those that know me out there. And the Eagle's Healing Nest is ready to move forward. We've been assured by the Attorney General's office just as of yesterday that we're back in full compliance and we're in good standings as a soliciting charitable organization. So thank you for your time, Madam Chair, and any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Seeing none, Representative Anderson, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the purpose of this is to amend a prior authorization appropriation and get it sent out to the Eagles Healing Nest. $500,000 is a request. So thanks, Madam Chair, and committee members for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Kozlowski and House File 4193. Thank you, Representative. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present House File 4193. I forgot to start with Ozawa Anakwad, Magizine and Dodem, Masabikan and Dunjaba. We're here to talk about rematriating the Kolke Forestry Center to its original caretakers in the Fond du Lac Band. I'm really proud to be here with leaders from the University of Minnesota as well as the band for making the trek down. This bill is before you because in 1909 the Kolke Forestry Center was established with about 2,000 acres that continued to expand, so now we're at 3,400 acres. It's unique in that it sits wholly within the tribal boundaries, as you can see in the map that was outlined for you. And this land was also unique in that it was reserved for the band in the 1854 Treaty of La Pointe, until a pair of federal laws in the 1880s actually permitted the United States government and the Minnesota government to parcel out this land. And then it was parceled out and used for lumber companies and used for extensive logging. And then it was eventually given, gifted to the university. And so we're here, the Kolke Forestry Center, when it was acquired over 100 years ago, it was actually also acquired at a fraction of the valuation. In fact, in talking with the university and with the tribe, the valuation of what it was purchased for was about $1.25 an acre. And so at the request of the band, as well as the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, they've put forward, in collaboration with the university and the state and many other partners, the dialogue to rematriate and return this land. So really quickly, Section 1 before you would authorize the Department of Administration to execute the title transfer that's needed, so that the regents can then transfer the Polk Forestry in its entirety to the band. You'll note that the fiscal note indicates the bill appropriates $1.3 million for the defeasance of this outstanding debt on certain state bond finance property, and would also accelerate the defeasance of the bonds that the legislature has previously approved for upkeep and maintenance through HEPR dollars. And so because of the way that this was acquired, the intent is then to make sure that the band does not have the financial obligation. So right now I will turn it over to my testifiers to share more about why this bill is important and before us, and why it's a very important step to right the wrong, but also to strengthen and sustain the research and bolster the collaboration that's happening.
Welcome, Vice President Roberts Davis. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I'm Alice Roberts Davis. I'm Vice President of University Services for the University of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and thank you to Representative Koslowski for carrying this bill and also for doing an outstanding job outlining what the intent of the bill is. We, in our conversations, ongoing conversations with Minnesota's tribal communities, all parties identified the return of the Cloquet Forestry Center to the Fond du Lac Band as a top priority. As Representative Koslowski described, this bill would do that. The one thing that we do need for it to do is to accelerate the defeasance of bonds in the amount of $1.3 million as described. We've worked extensively with Minnesota Management and Budget and their Debt Management Department. We've worked with the Attorney General's office. We've worked with the Department of Administration, and both the university and the Fond du Lac Band are in support of this legislation. We agree that our intent is to advance this community's interest, as well as the ongoing relationship between the university and the band, and to continue to advance forestry research in this area. Thank you.
Thank you. And Chair Dupuy, thank you so much for being here with us today. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Abuju, Nagani Woos Indigenous Cars Nagachi Wanang Nunjabam Gizito Dem. We do Kawashun Nungum Dashkutuyan Waj Chikian. Kakini Nagani Made Mani Duk, Kakine Mani Duk, Wabanung Zhaunung Nagabinung Giwaitinung. Good morning or still afternoon, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representatives. My name is Kevin Dupuy. I'm the Fond du Lac Chair, Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. This is an issue that is really dear to my heart and all of our members' hearts, of the principle of simply having a large tract of land that is completely surrounded by the borders and boundaries of the Fond du Lac Band. In guaranteed principles of the Treaty of 1854, that this 100,000 square acres of land would be yours in perpetuity. Principles that have came by in the process of this has opened it up to where we are today, and it's very important that this land go back into the band's hands as a simple principle of two things. One is healing into the understanding of it, and the other one is progression of the band. But also with this, the MOU that has been signed and worked out with the University of Minnesota and the Fond du Lac Band, we are willing and committed to extend that principle to the research that exists within the University of Minnesota Forestry Center, as a collective principle under that manner to co-management of a resource that truly we have not had the ability to execute, exercise, or manage in any way, shape, or form for 109 years. I think when we take a look at the principles of what is in front of us is the dark truth, and I think in the movement of the state of Minnesota, and we look at the truth projects and other principles that have gone through the University of Minnesota, is to exactly what that is, what the truth is, and it's not to condemn or disrespect anyone or any entity in any shape or form. It's just the reality of what's there. And I think by us, as in the year 2024, by accepting and moving forward with something, is we can see that barriers that were there before don't have to be there anymore. and organizations like this and the bands, we, by moving forward, we're showing that these barriers don't have to be in the market. We're showing that we can compress and progress as a collective and as unit principals. So I just want to say briefly that the importance of this is based on two principles. Who we are as a people in our history. We're the only group of people in the United States is not protected and guaranteed of our history. And I think this opens us up to this principle of the history of the forestry is, again, is a dark history, but at the same point in time where we are here today is to have a full understanding of it and show that, because no matter what the color of your skin, your belief system, that you can work together and you can co-manage principles and you can work as a collective, as a community. And it's not about taking anything away from anybody. It's about gathering it as a collective. So again, I appreciate the time and miigwech.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the to whoever wants to answer the question, though. So I'm looking at some conversations back and forth from the U of M and the Upper Midwest Law Center on this. And some of the questions here as just what does the Fond du Lac Band have to do with the property once transferred to them? And that is a question that constituents are asking too as these bills move forward, is what is the intention? And that supposedly the MOU does not spell out what the Fond du Lac's future intentions are, specifically with the Forestry Center. And while it's hypothetical the Forestry Center would stay there, there's nothing explicitly stated that the Forestry Center will stay there. And is it the university's intention then to, at a later date, build a Forestry Center outside of the Fond du Lac area?
Vice President.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. There is not an intent by the university to build an additional forestry center. The intent is for us to continue to do forestry research in conjunction with the band. What you have seen is the first of two MOUs that are proposed. That one just outlays what the situation is today, and then we still have additional work to do as far as what the long-term activities will be on the property. So we have not finished papering all of the agreement between the university and the band, but in the second agreement there'll be more information about how the land will be used longer term.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you. Does this information, the second part of the information that we don't know about yet, does that plan on being finalized let's say this bill were to become law, right? Is that before it becomes law, or is it after the fact?
Vice President.
Madam Chair, Representative, we have not started drafting the second part of the MOU because we've already been just getting in line with what it is that we need to do in order to transfer the property to them, and so those negotiations will begin then.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Kozlowski, closing comments.
All right, well, thank you, committee, again, for the opportunity to be before you to repair, restore, regenerate, and as has been discussed here, you know, the thing that would be changing is the title of the land, but that this is actually going to bring forward strengthened partnership, renewed work together. A lot of what has gone into this has been about public engagement and communicating out with the many partners, and also how we bolster traditional ecological ways of knowing and how that pairs well with continuing to care about climate change and wildlife ecology and our water and the way in which we as a collective can come out of this even stronger and making better out of something that was wrong. So really appreciate it and ask for your consideration for this support.
Thank you for your time. Mr. Chair, Madam Vice President, thank you for your testimony. Next up, Representative Hussein's bill, House File 5195. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. House File 5195, the Capital Mall Design Framework, is design process that will create a Capital Mall that is more welcome and for more Minnesotans. The CMDF is designed to process which will build upon planning offer included the 2040 comprehensive plan. In 2021, we have engaged community members in the state of Minnesota and the people that has come to visit for the survey engagement that the task force, the CAPOR put it together, was an opportunity that that people decide for this plan comprehensive that we're trying to move forward. Not only that, also it came from the expertise who has been serving for the CAPOR for many years. And not only the community, and it was the engagement that was put it together, and the task force that was every day. We will develop more detailed design frameworks with actionable and proposal. That, so that's why we're asking this money that is coming from the people of Minnesota and the people that have been visiting every day in the state capital. And I do have a testifier, Eric Duell, Executive Director, Secretary.
Thank you. And I should also note we have an amendment for reference, the A1 amendment.
Yes.
So, Executive Director Dahl, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Cedarleaf Dahl. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, or CAP Board, and thank you for the opportunity to hear about this bill today. The CAP Board has been developing a Capital Mall design framework, which is creating a plan to better connect, preserve, activate, and grow the Minnesota Capital Mall. This process is called the Capital Mall Design Framework and relies on input from Minnesotans from across the state. We've held events across the state. We've held a design shred at the Minnesota History Center. We've sent out multiple surveys and reached out to all members of the House and Senate as well to promote this in your areas. The Capital Mall is a design process which builds upon past planning efforts, as Representative Hussein mentioned, and with support of Minnesotans everywhere and the expertise of those who use and maintain the Capital Mall every day, CAP Board is developing a more detailed design framework with actionable proposals. And this $12 million bonding will help us move forward on certain components of the Capital Mall design framework. And I really appreciate the opportunity today, and let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you. Executive Secretary, questions? Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Directors, Representative. Being from northern Minnesota, I look at maps all the time, and they're worth a million words. And I'm upper mall, lower mall. Yeah. Help me with that.
All right.
Just in a visual description.
Yep, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You.
Mr. Dahl.
Madam Chair, Representative, if you take a look at the handout we have, there's a map on it. If not, the upper mall is essentially the. Oh, okay.
Sorry.
We can give it to you.
You can have mine.
The upper mall of the Capitol Mall is essentially above Martin Luther King Drive, close to the Capitol Hall, the green space there, where the stairs to the entrance of the Capitol are. And then the lower mall is below Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, where Veterans Affairs is and Veterans Services, excuse me, and a lot of the commemorative works and memorials that we see in the lower mall.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Helps a bit, eh? And none of this is going to be to this new building in this area here. This is a separate deal.
Mr. Dell.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you. This is a separate Capital Mall design framework. Looking at the entire mall and surrounding community, if you look on that map, there's the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board oversees zoning and regulation in the Capital Mall and Capital Area in that dotted line that goes up to Pennsylvania Avenue to the north, Marion Street to the west, Jackson Street to the east, and down into downtown Fitzgerald Park. To the south there.
Okay, the dash line. Yep, got it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions?
And I would like to add a little bit more, Mr. Representative Scrabo, is we're trying to reflect the holy state of Minnesota. This is not only in one building, but it will be the surrounding at the state capitol. That can reflect the state of Minnesota, how it should be looked.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Any closing comments?
This will be a beautiful project that money will be attract the state of Minnesota to come see it, and we welcome an active space for all Minnesotans, and I hope we can have support on this project.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Chair Nourisville, House Files 5078. Welcome to the committee, Chair Noor. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Noor, I'm presenting House File 5078. Madam Chair, members, this is a long-term discussion. This is in regards to the capital investment funds from the federal government that were meant to support communities that have been impacted by the pandemic. And this, it has been a long conversation. It was $180 million. From that $180 million, I think the initial intent from some of our colleagues was to put it all in broadband, but the purpose of the fund was supposed to go to broadband connectivity and community, multi-purpose community facilities. So a portion of that that is now remaining, it's about $47 million that the state of Minnesota received from the federal government. So the intent is to make sure that this funding, because of the conversation of ongoing with administration, with the other body and everyone else, to make sure that there's an equitable distribution of that fund, and it reflects some of the things that we had discussed previously. When I appropriated almost $70 million in 2021. In 2022, in the Ag Bill, there was another allocation of about $60 million or so for the broadband. At that point, we said not all the funds should go to broadband. We wanted to make sure that we had a process whereby we follow what the guidelines were. I know there wasn't a specific guidelines in terms of how much you can spend in any of those areas, but to make sure that communities that have been impacted the most by the pandemic have got access to that fund. I know the administration has got different plans. I'm willing to work with them, and I appreciate Chair Lee's involvement from the beginning in terms of making sure that we comply with what we had agreed to. And I'm hoping that we can come to conclusion before the end of this session. We'll be happy to answer any question from the members.
Thank you, Chair Noor. I believe you have a testifier. Director Oni. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and I appreciate the opportunity here to provide just some little bit more background. I think Chair Noor did a great job of laying out what the purpose of the bill is, and then kind of some thoughts or questions we have about the impact that as we move forward in our discussions about the impact of the proposal on how the grant is currently constructed. So as Chair Noor mentioned, this is a part of a federal grant, $50 million for the Community Facilities Project multi-purpose. Purpose is to help the most impacted communities from the pandemic around setting up facilities to help with work, health, and education-based activities. And by targeting this at economically disadvantaged communities, we hope to also have an impact on communities that have a cross-section. So we're looking at communities of color, communities with our members with disabilities, as well as low-income individuals, as well as veterans. Some examples of the facilities that would be benefited or created through this project are full-service community schools, community health centers, and libraries, as well as community centers. Having different options for various models allows communities to identify the best solutions that work for them to address the needs of their communities, and this would allow this to be community and family-based centered solutions. This approved plan would not only allow local units of government, like libraries, like municipalities to participate in the program as grantees, but would also allow community orgs and other nonprofits that may have viable facility projects to participate. So And finally, the way we've structured this grant through our approved application with U.S. Treasury that we got last fall in September is to work with the Minnesota Initiatives Foundations as well as the Greater Twin Cities United Way to run a lot of the grant award and support activities that we have on a regional basis. The structure is 50-50 to the Metro and Greater Minnesota. So based on our approved application, we just have some questions that we want to continue to work with Chair Noor and Chair Lee on the impact of the proposed modifications of the bill. First, modification would, we believe, as we read it, allow it to only go to local units of government. So what impact would this have on maybe the approved model we have? What impact does that have on our ability to work with the MIFs, Minnesota Initiatives Foundation, or Greater Twin Cities United Way as our grant-making partners? Is there a way we can reconstruct around that? And then how would that impact the participation of nonprofits and community orgs as direct grant recipients? That may be the best model for some particular communities. And then finally, we know that, as I mentioned, the program is already intended to benefit marginalized communities, and just wondering how the reference to the second line of the bill would have an impact on providing the parameters that it would set for the program. What impact would that have on viable projects and who they're going to benefit? So again, we really thank the committee, thank the chairs for and the author for the opportunity to share some thoughts and hear our questions around the impact of the bill, and look forward to continued partnership as we move forward.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Noor, what type of projects do you envision under your legislation?
Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, I think the intent is clear under the guidance of the federal government. I think you've heard from Adosh in terms of where that funding should be able to be utilized in terms of community facility to make sure that it addresses education, work, and health. That could be a school library that will also be addressing those three items. It could be a community center that will be addressing those three issues. It can become a community health center that addresses the same issues. So the guidance from the federal government are clear. What are the intents of how the funds should be used?
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Noor, can you cite some projects currently or that have been funded that do not meet the guidelines, so we have an example of what you don't want things to look like?
Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, I think the bucket of the fund was $180 million. Conversation in 2021 was all of that should go to broadband. And I think we were clear. We said, let's have a fair process where the funding will be distributed equally for the state, and also look at the communities that have been impacted the most. So that process, we allocated $70 million in the jobs bill, which I was the chair at that point, knowing that the $110 million will be divided into connectivity, whereby individuals in schools and other areas who need equipments like laptops and everything else, they could have received that. So that was the intent. And also, whatever is remaining, we spend in community facilities that will allow those communities to recover from the pandemic, and also to provide them with facilities that they can use as a community hubs. So that was the intent. We came forward in 2022. The decision was to spend the entire remaining $110 million for broadband. We intervened again, and at that point, I think we said $60 million should go straight to, again, to broadband. Guess what? That was not an equitable distribution of the fund. That was not the intent of the guidance that we got from the federal government. The intent was to have a process whereby everyone gets a portion of it. So the community facilities were left out, the connectivities was left out. So by negotiating with the administration, after we spent the entire portion on broadband, whatever was remaining was to let the department working with us to make sure that we can figure out how we spend that remaining fund into multi-purpose community facility projects. And that's where we are today. We were allocated or received up to $50 million that we're discussing right now that is a federal fund.
Representative Franzen, one brief follow-up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Noor, I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, so don't take it that way. Sometimes I can come across that way. But in the years that you're talking about, Republicans were not in control at all, you know, in the House. So wouldn't that be like a negotiating thing that your party would have done when putting together legislation?
Sorry, Turner.
Madam Chair, Representative Franzen, I think that was part of the conversation. We negotiated through that whole process collectively with the administration and how we should proceed with the funding. So nothing has changed from that perspective with this bill that we have before us today.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Franzen, maybe to your earlier question to Chair Noor, what projects have been funded or whatnot, you know, if you remember what Director Uni said was that we had to submit a plan to Treasury. And so as of date, my understanding is that there's no projects that has been funded through this particular project yet. And so I don't think that Chair Noor could give you any example. And I think to the larger conversation, you know, this is to further refine that conversation of what would happen, you know, back in 21, 22 on how could we actually make sure that this funding actually get out there to communities that need this as we continue to work and move forward.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. To anyone who can answer it, maybe Chair Lee or Adash or Representative. So I'm started at 180. We're down to 50. So 130 went to broadband so far. That's my math, not anyone else's. And does the state have any matching dollars in this? No, it's just so there's 50 left. And basically you're asking, and I'm trying to figure out our role is the problem I'm having. I'm trying to find out what is it that you want us to do or to work with. I'm thinking of some issues. I just got back from my hometown, and there's a nonprofit not getting money from the state that helps kids after school. You know, and I'm wondering if this is that trickle-down effect where this money is not being allocated for them, and is that not that it's going anywhere, but it's not being used right now. So and I'm trying to find out, is that what this issue is?
Chair Noor.
Madam Chair, and Representative Scraba, nothing has changed. The funds are already been allocated to the state.
Yep.
And the administration can spend with or without this legislation at this point. What we're putting is a guidance saying this is what we had discussed and negotiated from the previous conversation, which means that if you are county or local government, for those communities that have been impacted the most, now they can have that say of how the fund will be spent. I think you've had from the agency that there's already agreed to and how they will be spending through the nonprofit entities that are going to be administering this program through the Initiative Foundation and United Way. What we're telling them, this is the other side, part of the conversation, as you've had from previously. You sit together and figure out what is the best way to make sure that local governments have got that control of what is needed in their communities.
Thank you. That helped a lot.
Okay.
Just a process. I'm good with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Closing comments, Chair Noor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think this is a great opportunity for us to invest in our communities. I look forward to working with the administration. I appreciate the support from Chair Lee to make sure that we follow the guidance and we look at the totality of that $180 million and how we spend. And I'm asking for the administration to give us a full picture of how we have spent the entire $180 million with the remaining of the $50 million that we're discussing right now. So thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. And our last bill of the day is Representative Dodseth, House File 2884. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have some brochures that the testifier brought, if I could pass them on. Well, we got the best for last. How's that? Thank you, Madam Chair, Capital Investment Committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to share today. We are here sharing House File 2884. Today, it referenced the sewer lining for the city of Moose Lake. Currently, the city of Moose Lake is located in northeast, or not currently, it currently is located in northeast Minnesota, approximately 3,300 residents. There are also approximately 450 clients that are served in the Moose Lake Sexual Offender Program, as well as approximately 1,029 incarcerated in the city of Moose Lake Correction Facility. If the lines were to fail, it could be disastrous for the city as well as the people that it serves. The city is not currently in the position to improve any of the new lines for any future development due to the capacity of their wastewater ponds. The city owns their own wastewater treatment ponds, which are currently operating at 93% of design capacity, which is limiting the growth of development in the city. Their proposed L&L reduction project would create new needed pond capacity, which will increase development opportunities within the city, lead to job creation. It will also increase tax base, provide housing opportunities, and preserve adequate services to the correction facilities that currently serves. With me today to testify is Matt Wolf, Principal Manager, Project Manager, and Phil Etner, City of Moose Lake Superintendent.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. I'm Matt Wolf with SCH. I've been fortunate to serve as the city engineer for Moose Lake for the past 7 years. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I just want to start with, unfortunately, both our city mayor and city administrator are on vacation this week, which is why you're hearing from me, but they did want to pass along their appreciation for this opportunity. As you've heard, City of Moose Lake is a town of about 3,300 people. About half of that population comes from the Department of Corrections and the Sex Offender Program campuses. Our city is about 70% tax forfeit because of the size of those campuses and the school district, which does limit our taxing abilities. The city owns and operates their own wastewater ponds. It happens to be the second largest pond system in the state of Minnesota. It serves the city of Moose Lake. It serves both the DOC and MSOP campuses and all of Windermere Township. In the past 18 months, we've had some exciting opportunities and proposed developments brought to the city. They are shown on the map that was handed out, but real quickly I'll go through them. The city has two housing developments, or two phases of a housing development that are being proposed right now. The first is a 50-unit housing development. The second is around 65 homes. Moose Lake Brewery, which is located right downtown Moose Lake, approached the city last year. They want to increase their production by four times as much as they're currently producing, which would add flow to our system. Sand Lake Resort is in Windermere Township. They have development plans approved to construct a 70-unit new resort, and they have requested additional flow from the city. Windermere Township themselves have requested 10,000 gallons just recently from the city. We have a city-owned campground. We have a preliminary design complete to add 21 sites to that campground. We have an old high school that's been recently purchased by a developer who is looking to do housing. And then we've learned recently the DOC and the MSOP, they're not actually running at full capacity, and we've had meetings with them recently to let them know that if their campuses' populations want to increase, we actually cannot accept their flow at this point. So I tell you this because we've had some exciting opportunities. We have not been able to permit any of these projects and move them forward because of the capacity of our ponds right now. They are running typically at about 93% capacity, and anything over 90% is kind of in the, what we say, the danger zone. The city has been very proactive in the last 4 years, has done a small lining project, and we were able to reduce our INI, increase our pond capacity by about the equivalent of 60 homes. So actually just this month, we approved phase one of the housing development. So the first development that got approved, the rest are still not able to be moved forward at this point. what we're here for today is to ask for $1.5 million in state funds to construct a $3 million INI sewer lining project. That would, in essence, line the remainder of the old sewer pipes within the city. It would greatly reduce the INI, increase our pond capacity. We do feel that this is the most cost-effective way to do this. It is much cheaper than digging up all of our sewers and having to replace the streets along with them. And I would also note that, as has previously been stated, the DOC and MSOP campuses only have one pipe that serves them. It's the oldest one in our city. It's clay. It has holes in it. We've advised them that if this fails, they will have to find trucks and pump their sewage until we get it fixed. So we have a reliability issue here as well. So ultimately, if this project were to happen, we would be able to increase our pond capacity. We'd be able to permit the remainder of these projects. And then ultimately, it's going to lead to increased housing within our community, increased tax base, and a little bit of job creation. So we certainly appreciate your consideration for our project. Again, thank you for the opportunity, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you for your testimony. Were you also planning to testify?
No, ma'am, I was not.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just wondering, the information handed out to us says City of Moose Lake is seeking 1.5 in state funds, and then on the bill it says $650,000 is appropriated for this project. Could you clear that up for me, please?
Representative Bassa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It'd be amended to 1.3.
Oh, you're going to amend it?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Hussein.
That's what I was trying to ask, but at the same time, the total project, how much it cost?
The total project would be $3 million to line the remainder of the old sewers in the city. We are seeking $1.5 million in state, and then the rest would be locally funded.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to hear this hearing today. I'd like to thank my testifiers that came down to actually testify today as well. And I just ask for your consideration. I think you'll find that this is a worthy project, and look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, so that concludes today's hearing. I'd just like to share the expected roadmap for our committee. On Sunday, 4/28, the DE amendment will be posted to House File 5220, which is the 2024 GO bonding bill. On Monday, 4/29 at 1 p.m., we'll walk through the DE amendment. The deadline to sign up to testify is 3 p.m. on Monday, 4/20. Oh, okay. And then for public testimony, the deadline to sign up is 3 p.m. on Monday, 4/29, for the public testimony at 9 a.m. Tuesday morning, 4:30. On Wednesday, 5/1 at 9 a.m., we'll do the markup and vote. Deadline for amendments is 3 p.m. on Tuesday, 4:30, the night before. And then now that we have a quorum, could I please get a motion to approve the minutes from April 17th?
So.
Thank you. Representative Scraba makes a motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Minutes are approved. And with that, we are adjourned.